This episode may contain strong or offensive language. Hey, Jackie, you want to tell the people what's up?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to To and Fro. Today, we're going to be talking to a professor about the missing Black women in Southern hip hop. I'm going to give you some kind of great poetry vibes. And we even have an interview with money-making Megan Thee Stallion, a young MC out of Houston.
Yes, ma'am.
He want to be down. He respect my shape.
No, Jackie.
Just touched down in
Jackie.
The city. Okay.
Jackie.
I'll save it.
Leave it to Megan.
But it's like this though. I'm tired of folks, you know what I'm saying? The closed-minded folks, you know what I'm saying? It's like we got a demo tape and nobody wanna hear, but it's like this, the South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
So I did an interview with Dr. Regina N. Bradley, who's an alumna Nazir Jones Hip Hop Fellow and an assistant professor of English and African Diaspora Studies at Kennesaw State University in Georgia.
Her expertise is in 21st century African-American literature, hip-hop culture, race and contemporary U.S. South and sound studies. And she teaches a class on the hip-hop duo Outkast and their influences after the Civil Rights Movement.
And one of my first questions was, what exactly is Southern hip-hop?
I think Southern hip-hop is kind of its own culture within the larger culture itself. It's a reflection of, past, present, and future. Put it to a beat. The focus on, I think it's particularly important because Southern hip hop focuses on those issues and concerns that affect Black folks in the South that don't affect other folks in the same way. So I think that's what makes it Southern. It's not just, slang or, a Southern drawl, but actually the content is different. The motivation, the inspirations are different for Southern folks than everybody else. Sonically, if you listen to Northeastern hip hop, especially the Northeastern hip hop that was coming out of the late 90s or the late 80s and 90s, there was definitely a jazz influence, right? Everybody likes to talk about Nas. So even with Nas's Illmatic, his dad also does blues and jazz. And you can hear that influence on Illmatic and a lot of his other works, where in the South, folks do jazz, but there's also a big significance of blues, funk, and gospel. And often they come together to create a different sound. So sonically, the influences are a little bit different.
That's really interesting because a lot of these songs do provide narratives that I feel like are really specific to the South. I know whenever I listen to Houston songs and I hear them rapping about highways and different places that I've been, let me give you an example real quick. I represent the
Jackie.
Legendary screwed up click. I wreck Op 45. I wreck two screw tapes. I'm three wheeling popping trunk
right.
Going
okay,
down.
Okay, Jackie, Fuquay. I think we got it. I think we did.
I had to get to the Fuquay part.
Yeah,
and it just,
I see.
When you hear those songs, you picture yourself riding down in your car. I drove on Fuquay today, and it just gives you an insight to these different narratives.
Yeah, there's just something about doing, snakes, in the middle of the
swinging,
of the road,
swinging.
You know what I'm just saying? there's. What is it? It's illegal, but it's fine.
It's culture.
All about how
it's
you look.
It's for the culture.
Exactly. So, Jackie, Dr. Bradley even talked about how Southern hip-hop moves us forward.
Forward? What do you mean by that?
Yes, exactly, forward. It helps us remember who we were, but it also remembers who we are today.
Being in the South, we can't really get away from it in the way that other regions can because we do Civil War reenactments and we like Confederate statues and mountains and all that good stuff. So the pull for, what the music is used for is different. So not only is Southern hip hop used to remember folks, but it's also used to kind of like intervene and talk about contemporary issues that affect Black folks after, particularly after the Civil Rights Movement. It's one of those things like, I was raised in the South, so I never could get away from like all the stories of the movement, Jim Crow. I was constantly reminded, hey, don't forget, we marched, right? And I'm like, yeah, but with hip hop, that's also part of the conversation. But it's also like, yeah, we acknowledge that, but we're also moving forward. So we're moving forward with that in terms of sound. We're moving forward with that in terms of you know, what are some of the things that were missing from the movement or things that happened now that differed from the 1950s, 1960s and earlier? Right. So hip hop allows us to kind of grow up in a sense, grow up and grow out of the civil rights movement shadow, which is something that we're still continuously trying to do even today. Well, part of that is that non-Southerners feel like the South doesn't move on after 1968. You know what I'm saying? There's this, like, it's very comfortable to be like, oh, it's the South. Folks are backwards and poor and uncultured. So there's this stigma that is associated with Southern Blackness and Southern Black identity that seeps into the music. I mean, you know, there's a reason they call themselves outcasts. You know what I'm saying? you know, so not only was there, you know, the definite consideration that mainstream bi-coastal hip hop wasn't messing with the South, but then there's also that understanding that because folks are more comfortable with the types of narratives that come out of Jim Crow, out of the civil rights movement, then there isn't any room for more updated contemporary experiences. In ways that other regions are more privileged to do.
Dr. Bradley says this also can contribute to how these stories are being received by others. And one of the things that really stuck with me during our interview was
the marketability of the pain of Southern Black folks, because it doesn't really challenge any narratives. It doesn't really challenge any stories like, oh, Southern Black people, poor Southern Black people. You know, it's almost like slavery. And that's everybody else.
She even goes on to say that this perception of poor Southern Black folks kind of pushes aside what Black identity is in its contemporary form.
Contemporary South can really be hard to define, but I love the way she kind of, but not really, defines it, but just tries to put it in the simplest way as possible.
There are multiple contemporary Souths. And what I mean by that is me coming up in Albany is different than you coming up in Texas. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are commonalities, obviously, but there's also, you know, distinctions. You know what I mean? Like, okay, so let me ask you a question. So when I was coming up, when I was in high school, my kid was all Outkast, UGK, Pastor Troy, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm in Georgia. So obviously Atlanta is in Georgia.
Yeah.
But Atlanta's not all of Georgia. I just want to put that out there. But Atlanta's in Georgia, right? And, you know, who were some of the hot folks that you were listening to in Texas?
Like Bun B. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Them,
so
yeah.
Like, yeah, it's like, you know, so it's like the approach is different, right? So like in Texas, you're listening to Bun B, Scarface, Ghetto Boys, mm-hmm. UGK, right?
Yeah.
And then over here in Georgia, I'm like, nah, Outkast, Goody Mob, Lil Jon and the East Side Boys, Phil Mob, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still Southern. So I think that's the main characteristic for me, is that Southern hip hop allows us to have diverse Southern Black experiences, because the way that folks move to bounce in New Orleans is different than folks listening to Chopped and Screwed in Texas, is different than folks listening to Crunk in Georgia or in Tennessee. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I mean, like, I think that's the major characteristic. And then the second part of that probably would be, a lot of Southern hip hop artists don't forget that, you know, civil rights movement happened, slavery happened. There's always some kind of reference to that, right? So like, something that I say that always gets me in trouble, and I'm to the point where I really don't care, is in New York, you know what I'm saying? There's a particular genesis point for hip hop. In the South, the civil rights movement starts Southern hip hop. The genesis point is different. And then additionally with that too, you know, urban and rural Southern hip hop needs distinctions as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, so I'm from Southwest Georgia. So Field Mob is also from Albany, right? And they were talking to particular experiences that wouldn't resonate in the same way with somebody who was from a more urban area of the South, like Atlanta, like Miami, New Orleans, Houston. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, you know, it's different. You know, I mean, you wouldn't listen to Nappy Roots in the same way that you would listen to 3-6 Mafia. the outcome is different.
With her bringing up the different Southern experiences, I kind of wanted to hear your perception and your experience with Southern rap music, D'Elia, because, you know, your hometown is only an hour away from Louisiana, but I know you still get a lot of influences from the Texas culture.
Yeah, you know, that's really funny, because we did have, I remember growing up, we did have a lot of Houston rap playing, but we also had a lot of Boosie, you know, Webby, and, you know, Boosie Bet, and I zoom right by ya. Like,
what's that? I know.
What's happening? Yeah, exactly. And so some of those influences kind of bleeds, you know, off into Texas in that particular portion. Kind of the same for like blues and Zydeco, right? Like Zydeco isn't really native to Texas, but in East Texas, it's kind of a big deal.
Definitely. So after this kind of look into the Southern hip hop, you guys kind of talk about a Black woman's presence in it. And I think it's really interesting what she says contributes to this absence.
That made me kind of think about, on the flip side, yeah, there's a dearth of women MCs in Southern, and just in Southern hip hop, right? But there's also a dearth of women who are writing about Southern hip hop. So that's kind of also the flip side of that is, you know, if you want to make history, you got to make sure that you're somewhere to be able to write it. So there's that. But in terms of, you know, it's just really interesting in terms of the way that women play into Southern hip hop. Of course, you have like the visual aspect of it, which is like video vixens and stuff like that, right? And then Southern hip hop, you know, with bass music, right? I mean, dudes were dancing just to dance, right? But there's also this kind of assumption that you would also see, you know, women. But yeah, in terms of the actual, like, you know, performance, the emceeing part of it, yeah, I would agree with that. But I would also agree that there needs to be women in other aspects of it too, whether it's production, whether it's the journalistic aspect, right? So like, shout out to folks like, you know, Joycelyn Wilson, who was doing Southern hip hop as a woman doing journalism, right? So yeah, I think it's you know, if anything, I would want folks to push past just, oh, there aren't enough women MCs, and actually think about, are there women in other areas of Southern hip hop that also influence the story that's being told? I mean, like, I think, you know, in terms of higher visibility, I think what's also interesting that's happening now is the role of social media, right? You know, the role that social media plays and how folks make themselves visible, make their stories visible. And heard, which opens up for a lot of interesting conversations in terms of the ways that gender continues to influence how we think about hip hop, especially hip hop in region. You know what I mean? Because now we're at the point too. You know, Southern Playlisted came out in 1994, right? So we're almost like 25 years out from the hip hop album that put the South on the map. And what I mean by that is, before folks come after you or me, what I mean by that is that, you know what I'm saying, Outkast was the first Southern group to be rejected by mainstream hip hop. They literally got booed off a New York stage at the Source Awards, right? So there was an incessant need to have a particular type of Southern region identity in ways now you don't have to fight that hard. If you want to be Southern, be Southern. You know what I mean? Like what's his name? It took me a long time to realize that Panda and Future weren't the same person. I was like, who's this dude and what's he doing? And I'm like, he's not even from the South, he's like from New York, but he sounds just like this cat out of Atlanta.
yeah.
So there's like, I don't think that there's a heavy focus on being, you know, Southern or being from New York or being from the West Coast in the way that it was in the 90s and the early 2000s, because that work has already been done. You know what I'm saying? So now when you think about Southern hip hop, it's kind of sad, but now you think about Southern hip hop, most folks just think out of Atlanta because that's like the hub. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Dr. Bradley even goes on to talk about the growth of hip hop and Atlanta's presence in that, and the misconceptions about how Atlanta is kind of this, how Atlanta's hip hop kind of represents all hip hop, which is not true. And I know a few people are going to come after me about that. You know, really, it is what it is. But that's another conversation for another time. There's this obvious craving for Black Southern women's narratives in popular culture when you look at the reaction to Lemonade and even A Seat at the Table. Dr. Bradley kind of talks about that.
Well, the problem is when folks feel left out.
Yeah, imagine.
Like, I mean, you know, I'm telling you, wow, that must be something.
Wow.
So I mean, like, you know, so like when the Lemonade Digital album dropped in like February 2016. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. Right. Folks were like, oh my God, I don't know what to do with this. Beyonce, she's doing something that we're not used to her doing. And then like Southern Black women were like, yep, I know exactly what's going on. So it was like a love letter, right? I mean, like I said this when I had the conversation with Dream Hampton. It's like a love letter to Southern Black women. It's also a reminder that Beyonce is Southern.
Yes.
Can we not?
Yes. Yes.
Can we not move away from that fact? And then, you know, the fact that she is focusing more on her Southern roots, not her roots, her roots. Makes folks uncomfortable. But the other part of that too is some folks might be putting those narratives out there. They're just not mainstream. Right?
Yeah.
Whatever mainstream means in 2017, whatever mainstream means. Again, social media. I don't need a record label to put out music. I think that's part of it. But then I kind of stand by what I was saying in terms of, you know, if folks feel like they're being left out, then they just dismiss it. And that's, you know, unfortunate, especially when it comes to Southern Black women creatives, right?
Mm-hmm.
So kind of just continue to work through that through the work that is being produced and the music that's being produced, like Rhapsody. Oh, my God. Yes, Layla's wisdom.
Look, I got good bones. Diamonds between my knees. Oil's in my thighs. Does my sassiness upset you? Or you mad that I survived on the way up?
You know what I'm saying? Where does that come from? She said it comes from, you know, her talking to her grandmother and the women in her family, right? Like, that's how knowledge and power is passed down generationally, is oral tradition, which is a very big part of the Southern experience, but especially for Southern Black women.
First of all, Layla's wisdom is freaking amazing. Sassy is my jam, and any woman quoting Maya Angelou is good in my book. But Jackie, she even talks about narratives and the way that Black women share those particular stories.
We rarely speak for ourselves.
You better read us. You better read us.
I mean, we don't. You know what I'm saying? And what I mean by that is there's often a sense of our sense of purpose is often grounded in community. So it's like, what's good for the, I mean, like, if you look at even, you know, if you want to go back to the movement, all right, let's go back to the movement. If you look at folks like Fannie Lou Hamer, right, who's talking about she's sick and tired of being sick and tired. What was she doing to be sick and tired of sick and tired? Well, she was organizing, right? Ella Baker, same thing. So, you know, when Rhapsody came out with Layla's Wisdom, I'm like, there it is, right? I mean, like, we're revisiting how we got these channels of knowledge that we got. And then on top of that, you know, we rarely speak for ourselves, but, you know, the voice that we speak with is never our own either. You know what I'm saying? And what I mean by that is, you know, the voice I'm speaking with, yeah, I sound like Regina. I sound like Dr. Bradley. But that voice was built upon Sarah Pearl and Mary Barnes and all of these other, you know what I mean? Like, it's not just me speaking for myself.
But
if your mom gives you a piece of advice, like my mom's always giving me advice, my grandma, she, whenever she want to be nosy, she be like, she calls me and she's like, there's just something in my spirit. Well, who talking to her in a spirit? Right? And most of the time she's right. Like, when she calls me, she's like, there's something in my spirit.
But she never says, like right. She says it. She's saying it from another place. It's not necessarily
she
from her.
She says that she always says it's something in her spirit.
Huh.
Well, who's talking to her in her spirit?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It also kind of made me think about, you know, Mia X, right? With No Limit. I mean, like, she used her voice to remember her girlfriends who had been murdered.
Dear Jill, I've been trying to do my thing since you've been away. But I think about you every day. It's still hard. I'm still bitter, still missing my sister.
How do we get to a point? And I don't know if you know the answer to this, but like, how do we get to a point to where we're speaking for ourselves instead of speaking for somebody else?
I don't think we're ever going to get away from that. That's who we are.
We're just
too nice.
And
I mean, like, not just on that end of it, but I mean, like, I don't mind using my voice to remember and uplift those who came before me, right? That's the other side of it.
Yeah.
It's not just you walk all over us, you know what I mean? But the other side of that, too, is somebody else lifted us up to speak because they couldn't speak for themselves. So I just look at it. I mean, like, you know, I look at it as a sense of obligation. There's probably, you know, young girls coming up behind me who are smarter than me, more brilliant than me, more, you know, articulate, as much as Black people hate that word, articulate than me. And I need to make room to lift them up to do that. And I think in the South, that's amplified. So,
I mean, I'm in awe. Of course, we both knew that Black women are the bomb.
Amazing. Amazing.
It's, every time you hear about it, it just drives into your head that Black women are amazing.
Yes.
But she makes a great point. Beyoncé used words from Warsaw Shire and the matriarchs of her family to help tell her own narrative.
Exactly. And we talked about, you know, that three-letter word that makes your grandma faint and, you know, your mama tremble, you know,
at
any
time. What's the word?
Dare I say it? Okay. Six.
Yeah, I got a couple of thoughts on that. I mean, like, one, I'm actually writing about it for the Outcast, but, right, this idea of pleasure in Black women, especially in the South, because, you know, normally our ideas of sexuality are still rooted and strangled by the idea of slave women, right? You know, the understanding that slave women couldn't speak for themselves, the language of rape and sexual assault wasn't available to them because they weren't considered to be human beings, one, let alone women. So there's still like this high, high regard for sexual conservatism, sexuality in the South. And when you see how that sexuality is visualized via hip hop, then it reemphasizes kind of like these stereotypical understandings of what is and what is not Black women and Black girl sexuality.
And that's so true, especially the part about representing your family. You know, even though we're over-sexualized at such a young age, you just have to be conscious of, you can't be too grown.
Yes,
you
exactly. You can't be hot or mannish.
What's mannish? Because I don't think I've heard that.
I don't know. I think it's just like maybe a country thing, but when I was growing up, it always meant that you were too fast. Your tail was too fast.
Fast.
You were being mannish.
Fast, grown, and hot. I've heard those.
Yes, exactly.
But, girl, do not remind me. So, Dalia, I have a question for you.
Yes.
What is your favorite Southern female rap artist as of right now?
I would say it would have to be Rhapsody. Like I said earlier, Layla's Wisdom is like one of my faves right now. She kind of, it's just like really amazing to kind of hear like this serious type of rap coming from a woman's, you know, own voice. How about you?
Not just because you interviewed her, but I have been on this Megan Thee Stallion kick ever since I saw her pop up on my Twitter
feed.
She was in a cypher with mostly all males, and she held her own, and in my opinion, she did the best. And ever since then, I'm like, who is this girl? I need to know her. I need more music from her. And so Megan Thee Stallion is like in my top right now.
Yes, she's top 10 for sure. Top 5, honestly.
And you even asked Dr. Bradley who her favorite was as well.
I've always been a Mia X fan. Always. Mama Mia is it. And
why?
I don't know, man. She just held her own. I just like the way that her wordplay was ridiculous too. But you know, I am slowly but surely becoming a Rhapsody stan also.
Wonderful minds think alike, Jackie.
Okay, but wait. Before she stepped out, did you ask her the important question that we have to ask everybody who steps
Jackie
to the show?
I'm like, this is the second time. Like, you don't have any trust in me. Now, you know
I just cannot
end. You know, I can't end our interview without asking how she felt about King B herself.
Oh, you would wait till the end of the... Okay. So, I am not a member of the Beehive. I have never... Listen, no, seriously. Like, my husband can count my receipts. I've never been a Beyonce fan like that. Interestingly enough, it really wasn't until Lemonade that I was seriously, like, I seriously started sitting with her. No, don't be hurt because I didn't. I'm not knocking her. I'm not hating on her.
Okay.
I'm just saying that, you know what I'm saying? I'm not a card-carrying member of the Hive. That's cool.
Well, anytime that you want to come into the club, you know.
I don't know if I can afford the membership fees.
You know what? We all can't. But for Beyonce, I will go broke. Well, I'm glad that you were honest with me. I am a little disappointed.
Don't be too mad.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought you were going to say you were a stan. I was ready for that.
No.
I am so happy that I didn't ask this at the beginning of the interview because I don't know if it would have been as
you didn't know if
you've
been able to continue the conversation.
I'm just a little taken aback. Just a little.
You told me to answer honestly, and that's what I did.
You're right, and I have to be ready for that. So you know what? I blame myself. I do. You know, I was just a little disappointed in what she said, but you know, I'm not going to hold it over her head because we had a good interview.
Everybody isn't us.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And I try to remember
that. Yes, exactly.
But
it's really sad, honestly.
Yeah, still stinks.
To and Fro presents Still I Rhyme, a poetry reading of some of the most profound Southern hip-hop songs. I want you to welcome Jax with three X's to the stage. Show her some love.
Show me some love, show me some love. Snap, 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 snap. I want you to lean with it, rock with it, like a pimp.
You better say that.
Nook, if you are Buck, while you are sipping on some scissor.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to make them say, oh. I want you to back that. What? Give me 50 feet.
All right now.
I'm about to set it off because I am so fresh and so clean. You know, it's hard out here for a pimp. Because sometimes I feel like my mind is playing tricks on me.
Mm.
But you know what? You know what, y'all? It's all good. Because I'm from the South, and I got what?
All right now.
Diamonds in my mouth. So D'Elia did a quick interview with Houston rapper Megan Thee Stallion, the Black Regina George, H-Town Hottie, you know you heard about her, Money Making Megan herself. Take a listen.
The girls are good, but can they work it like a stallion? Can they work it like a stallion? Work it like a stallion. Work it like a stallion.
Shout, it might look good, but it don't mean shit if she can't.
Work it like a stallion. Work it like a stallion.
Oh, I love it when she work it like a stallion.
In heels, working a wheel, whipping a foreign like a cutlass. Real big titties, big butt, bitch, young, it's a young, it's.
So where exactly does the name Megan Thee Stallion come from?
So basically, since I've been about 16, I've had, you know, this same body. So growing up, like, older guys would always be like, oh, wow, you're a stallion. Oh, you're so tall. Oh, wow, you're built like this, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, well, what is a stallion? Like, and I had to go do my homework. Like, I had to ask my uncles and stuff like that. Well, what is a stallion? Is that good? And they were like, yeah, that means you're built. And I'm tall, so that's pretty much where the stallion part came from.
Yeah. How tall are you?
I'm 5'10".
5'10". Oh, cool. Okay, yeah. I'm actually 5'11", so I already understand where you're coming from.
Hello. Tall girls winning.
So I'm a big fan, as well as many others, and also my co-host Jackie is as well. So can you tell me a little bit about, you know, growing up in Houston, a little bit about your background?
I don't know. I've always been like a really silly girl, like a goofy person. I'm always cracking jokes and stuff. And it probably wouldn't come off like that in my music. Like, sometimes people think I'm going to be like really bougie or, you know, mean, but, you know, I don't really show my silly side a lot, but I've been trying to interact with my fans more so they can really get to know me.
Yeah. And whenever you were growing up, you know, you said you listened to a lot of gangster rap. Like, who exactly mm-hmm. were you listening to?
I was definitely listening to Pimp C, 3-6 Mafia, Biggie, of course, Lil' Kim. But, like, yeah, I was listening to some pretty rough stuff.
How long have you been rapping, and exactly who inspired you to rap in the first place?
I came out in 2016, but my mom used to be a rapper. So, like, before, like, anything, like, you know, that's the only person I ever saw rapping. Like, I would go to the studio with her all the time, and I'll be like, wow, I could do this. I could see myself doing that. So I'll be, like, secretly writing while she was, like, in the booth or whatever, and then I just grew up to be this.
Yeah, and your mom was a rapper. Like, you just, like, threw that on me. Like, I'm supposed to know, like, an amazing fact like
I'm
that.
Sorry. Yeah. She's pretty awesome. She was actually pretty gangster. Like, when she first heard me rap, she was like, oh, whoa, Megan. You're going to have to come out when you're 21 years old. Okay.
Oh, my God. What was your mom's?
Like 19.
What was your mom's rap name?
Hollywood.
Hollywood? Mm-hmm. Did she, you know, ever put out any music or anything in Houston?
Oh, yeah, she did. She's actually pretty popping. But
hey.
She's the mama stallion.
Yes.
Yeah, locally. Mm-hmm. She just is in my corner, just the biggest cheerleader ever.
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh, my gosh. That's amazing to have your mom as a rapper. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome. And she's on my management team, too, so she keeps me pretty in line.
Amazing. Okay, yeah. Just, you know, from the point of view of even your mom and you, you know, how hard is it to navigate as a woman in a male-dominated realm, especially in Southern hip-hop? Because you don't really hear about a lot of women in that genre of music.
I don't want to be treated differently as a rapper because I'm a female. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want everybody to treat me the same because I really work hard at it. So I don't really look at it as, oh, it's just so male driven, because I know if I keep going hard, then I'm going to get to where I want to get to. And I feel like I, you know, kind of go harder than a few guys that
yes,
I know. So.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
And I mean, do you even see yourself as a role model for a lot of young women or just like, you know, girls trying to enter that type of music?
Yeah, definitely I do. I know that I say some pretty vulgar things sometimes, but like if you really follow me, like you'll see that I do wake up and I go to school every morning. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to be I'm a pretty positive person. Like I don't really talk crazy on social media. Like I'm not really trying to beef with anybody. Like I really want everything to be just smooth and positive. And I want women to feel free. You know what I'm saying? I want them to feel happy, and I want them to feel like they shouldn't be scared to say things that are on their mind. Because I know a lot of girls, they don't really, like, the things that I'm saying, 9 times out of 10, they're probably thinking it. Mm-hmm. So just why not say it? You know what I'm saying? And if you don't want to say it, you can just listen to me say it, and, yeah, just live through me.
Yeah, I don't want to call, I don't want to text. Trying to set me up, put me on the net. I don't do no pics, I don't shoot no vids. And you ain't going to see my name in no GM. I be doing me, hanging low key.
I know that you just released your new EP, Make It Hot. Can you tell me a little bit about the creative direction in that particular album?
Basically, I had just started working with a new producer, and my sound is pretty Southern sometimes, but he is from like Gary, Indiana. So he brought like a whole new flavor to my music, but still at the same time, he knows my style. So he made so many awesome tracks for me to just get over. So I wrote so many songs. I try to make things that put you in, you know, different moods.
Do you ever receive like any pushback or criticism, you know, for not being afraid to talk about especially your sexuality in a lot of these songs? Mm-hmm. Because I know I feel like a little baddie whenever I listen.
Okay. That's what I want you to feel like. But actually, I don't really pay attention to the hate, like, so I really don't even see it. Mm-hmm. I've probably seen a couple of comments at one point, and some guys were like, oh, why do female rappers only talk about their vagina, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Like, I have a vagina. Like, I'm going to talk about it sometimes. I mean, why are you offended? You know what I'm saying? But a lot of people, I get more positive and lovely feedback than I do negative. So if people are talking mess about me, then I probably won't see it because I don't even address stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. What has been one of your favorite songs and why?
Favorite songs that I made?
Both.
So one of my favorite songs, okay, I'm going to say two. Two of my favorite songs, three of my favorites, all of my songs are my favorite songs. From the EP, Last Week and Crazy are my favorite songs.
Oh, Crazy is my favorite.
Yes, Crazy is my jam.
And I can tell what he thinking like a twin thing, and they can never understand it because it's our thing. God got moves like a tarantula. Get up in my web, I'm going to snatch you up. Long ass legs, I can wrap you up. And now I got you in your bag like a sack of lunch.
It's just really like, me and my mom listen to the song like every single day. But and my favorite song by somebody else. I don't know if you are a Pimp C fan, but
there is
a song he has called Gravy. Mm-hmm. And I just love the song. It makes me feel so cool. Like, it makes me feel like I'm Pimp C. Whatever he's talking about, I'm with all that. Just how the beat like comes on. The whole track itself is just a real laid back, cool vibe. And then Pimp C get on there with his like real smooth voice. So like whatever he's saying, I probably, if I didn't know the words, I wouldn't even care just because of how he's riding the beat. Like he just sounds cool. So I believe whatever he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. One of my last questions, do you have any advice for any other aspiring rappers?
Yes, I do actually. Just don't give up. Keep pushing, keep going, because you might not pop this year, mm-hmm. but that don't mean you're not going to pop 2 years from now.
How do you feel about Beyonce?
Oh my God, what do you mean? Beyonce is everything. Beyonce is life. Like, I'll probably follow, me and my mom together probably follow over 1,000 Beyonce fan pages. I just love Beyonce. She is definitely a H-Town hottie.
Like, yes.
We love Beyonce.
Well, thank you so much, Megan. I really appreciate it doing this interview with you. This was amazing.
This was an awesome interview.
Yes.
Hey, okay, last week we was eating peanut butter jelly. Damn. Then I hit a leg, now we count Benjamelli's.
Okay. Megan can be found on Instagram and Twitter at The Stallion. That's T-H-E-E. S-T-A-L-L-I-O-N. Go follow our girl and show her some love.
Last week I had to make $100.
All right, now, so we're at the end of the show. And Dalia, what is your to and fro moment for this week?
For those who don't know, our to and fro moment is kind of when we reflect on some of the things that are going on in our own lives or, you know, any advice to anybody else. And I would say that my to and fro moment is just believing in yourself and just truly believing that you belong in a certain place, even though you don't see yourself reflected in the same place. And just make sure you have people around you who kind of reassure you of that. Also, you know, if you don't believe in yourself, how is anybody else going to believe in you as well? So that's my to and fro moment. That's what I'm at.
That was amazing. That was also a word, but
yes, amen.
My to and fro moment this week would just be about how, as Black women, we talked about this earlier, how we don't even speak for ourselves. We often advocate for others, and that kind of translates into our mental health. We always put others before ourselves before we take care of ourselves, and we always want to make it easier for everyone else and end up taking that burden. So my to and fro moment is just kind of, it's okay to take care of your mental health. It's okay to take a step back and not feeling weak in doing so, and just take those times out to do your self-care. Take your time out to just think about yourself and be with yourself and love yourself. So take care of yourself. That's my to and fro
moment.
Sister
Jackie, I love you, and I want you to take care of yourself.
I do. You care about my mental health. You really do. Your tweet, my tweet was about you.
Wait, which tweet?
My tweet that said, shout out to your friends who care about your mental health.
I feel so special. Thank you. You had me scared, but it's okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's the end of our show.
Make sure to tell your friends about us, your mama, your daddy, everybody. Tell everybody about us.
Music by Honey Banks. Follow her on Twitter at Miss Chris Honey B.
Follow us on Twitter at The To and Fro, and like us on Facebook. Dalia, do you have something to lead the people with today?
Yes, my country saying this week. You thought like lit. You thought you'd farted, but you...
Girl. You need help. You need to talk to somebody, because no. Bye.
Bye, y'all. Concentrating on what's next.